Welcome to the Week in Review, where we discuss the top issues in state, national, and international news each week with two guests from different political perspectives. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Some of the issues on our list this week: the budget priorities that Governor Scott Walker announced this week, the fiscal cliff talks in Washington, D.C., and the Palestine winning recognition as a state from the United Nations. We'll welcome your reactions to these stories, and we want you to bring up other issues in the news this week that you would like our guests to discuss and debate at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Ben Mansky, Executive Director of Liberty Tree. Good morning.
Morning, Joy.
And also with us, Owen Robinson, columnist at the West Bend Daily News, blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. And good morning, Ben.
Morning, Owen.
It's good to have you back, Ben. Ben has been off our Week in Review list for about a year, I think, because he was the campaign manager for Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein. And you were actually on the ballot yourself here in Wisconsin anyway as the vice presidential running mate in Wisconsin. That was more as a placeholder. We don't have candidates for office or campaign managers or current office holders on our Week in Review program. So welcome back.
Thanks, Joy. It's great to be back.
And we don't want to get too far off our mission to review the news of the week, but I do want to give you a brief opportunity to provide your analysis of the election outcome.
Well, from the standpoint of the Green Party, it was a major step forward. It was we increased our vote total by a factor of three. Roughly 500,000 Americans have had their votes counted for the Green Party ticket. And we're seeing incredible growth across the country as a result of this campaign. So that has been very positive. What's also been interesting to me in the weeks following the election is to see that our final reported vote total has increased by a factor of 25% over what was reported on election night. And the votes are still being counted in some states, Arizona to New York, you name it, and not being counted in other states. The state of Indiana has not counted or reported our votes. And so we're looking at litigation there. But for the larger picture, you're also seeing that the spread between President Obama and Governor Romney has increased significantly, so that the final reported popular vote totals for President Obama will probably be a larger margin than most people will remember from election night by a factor of several percentage points, which means several, probably 3 to 5 million votes.
Interesting. Well, you know, Owen, the last time we talked with you was our remote broadcast in Milwaukee, I believe, in October before the election. Did everything turn out the way you expected?
Not how I expected and not how I necessarily would have liked. I was happy to see in Wisconsin that we had record turnout once again, and with that sizable turnout to see the Republicans take back the Senate, increase their lead in the assembly, and of course with Walker winning the recall earlier in the year, I think that was a message about where the direction of Wisconsin is going, where the people want it to go. At the national level, clearly Obama won a handy victory and deserves to be back in office. The people have spoken.
Well, we'll certainly talk more about the national issues and President Obama in just a bit. I wanted to start with some of the state news, though. Governor Walker did lay out his budget priorities at a stop in Green Bay. He started a Talk with Walker tour, not open to the public, but getting feedback on his state budget priorities. He said that his top priorities are job creation, workforce development, education, transformation, reforming government waste, and transportation. Ben Mansky, what's your reaction overall to Governor Walker's budget priorities?
Well, I don't think we've seen his budget priorities yet. I think what we're seeing is a pre-budget announcement intended to spin whatever he eventually unleashes on the state of Wisconsin. I think most listeners will remember that he ran as a moderate in the 2010 gubernatorial race and then unleashed a carpet bombing campaign against his political opponents, essentially in the dead of night, a Friday morning before a weekend, February 13th. And so we'll see what he does. I think people who are listening need to be ready. The reality is the very rich and big corporations have hundreds of lobbyists and lawyers just waiting to walk the halls of government to make sure that the Republican majority in the legislature keeps in line. And we have to be our own advocates. We don't have an army of lobbyists and paid lawyers to represent us. So I think the question is, what will Walker actually do? And then there's also a question of what he won't do. You know, the reality is that Wisconsin has been left behind in the move towards a new economy. Clean technology, green technology has been left in the dust. And Wisconsin has been last in the country in terms of job loss. In other words, first in the country in terms of job loss for several years now. And I would argue it's because Governor Walker is taking us back in time rather than forward.
Yeah. Are you as concerned as Ben, Owen, with what Governor Walker might do with the state budget?
Well, clearly, I mean, there aren't details behind these yet. You can talk about job creation, education transformation. Until we see details of actual bills and what that means and what various proposals wind their way through the legislature, we don't really know what we're talking about yet. But I do think it is incumbent upon any leader of a state to come out with those priorities, with the priorities that he's trying to set for the state. And I think things like job creation and workforce development and reforming government waste are all certainly laudable goals to work on. And I look forward to the details. I would say that, you know, despite the rhetoric of carpet bombing and dead of night and all those things, that the voters clearly affirm the direction that Walker is taking Wisconsin. And I look forward to seeing us go further in that direction.
Should Governor Walker have public events, Owen, rather than stopping at businesses and talking to, you know, the employees only and no members of the public being allowed in?
I think that that anytime an elected official is out, there should be a mix of those things. And we see that with President Obama as well, where he meets at the one point at sometimes with just CEOs or just small business leaders. And sometimes he has what's essentially a campaign rally that's open to the public or open to donors or whatever it may be. But certainly getting a mix of those viewpoints, and for Governor Walker to hear the specific concerns of people in specific industries that are important to Wisconsin, I think those are key constituencies as well. So while there's been a couple meetings here or a couple rallies, if you will, in front of a relatively closed audience, those were still regular people with regular jobs and regular Wisconsinites who were voicing their opinions. And I think Walker needs to hear from us all.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any problem with the nature of the Talk with Walker tour, Ben?
Well, I think it would be wonderful if the governor were to meet with workers on their own time and in their own space. But I'd have worked many jobs where I didn't feel that I had the ability to speak my mind at the job site. And, you know, I think that these are essentially photo ops for the governor. The reality is he has never held public events. He's not the only one. I mean, Herb Kohl was infamous for not holding public hearings either. But this is not in the Wisconsin tradition. It's not in the tradition of open government. This is a governor who has repeatedly tried to close the Capitol to the public, and I think this is more of the same.
Let me ask, we don't have the specific proposals that would be in the budget, but one of the things we know that the governor wants to do that would have budget implications is he's talking about the possibility of expanding the Milwaukee School Choice Program or the School Voucher Program to cities beyond Milwaukee, presumably. Ben Mansky, would you have any concerns with that?
Well, I think that the verdict is in on this program, and what we're actually looking at is an expansion of public subsidies for private corporations that are making money off of our kids. That has been the agenda of a section of the education industry for many years. They look at public education as a potentially very profitable sector where you have a captive audience, and it's definitely not in the interest of the public. These schools perform worse than public schools when you take into account all the comparables, and they oftentimes cost more.
Owen?
Here at the end of the goal, we need to look for outcomes and not inputs. And if we're looking for outcomes, we're looking for the fact that there are some communities where the public schools aren't the best in the nation or even in the state, and that to give parents that educational choice, for them to make the choice to send their children to schools that they want to send them to, where they believe they're getting a quality education, to put those taxpayers or tax dollars back in the hands of parents who have the best interests of their own children in mind. And it is kind of insulting to think that the state should have more control and more decision over those where those kids go to school and what their best interests are than their own parents. And to think that we're only going to make those options available to certain people and not all Wisconsinites is because, frankly, there are some of us who we can afford to send our kids to private schools and still pay the public taxes, and we're just fine. But there are a lot of Wisconsinites who can't make that choice, and I applaud the governor for moving in that direction.
Yeah. Cody in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Cody.
Yes, my question was about the vulturizing of our schools. They haven't got the results that they would have liked out of it. We can only afford one public system. We can't afford to spend money on private and mostly religious schools. So I think we should stick to one public education program and give up on this voucherization and privatization of everything. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. Well, you both kind of, Ben, do you have any more on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cody makes a very important point. The reality is that we have had the opportunity to evaluate the impact of this program, and the impact has not been what has been claimed. You still hear the same talking points about choice, but the reality is everybody's talking about choice. The vast majority of them are people who do make the choice to send their kids to private schools. They are wealthy people. Most of us who come out of public school systems understand that idea of choice is an illusion that's dangled in front of working people and poor people in this state. And that what we actually need is we need public schools that are fully funded. I mean, if you look at the agenda of the folks like the Bradley Foundation, this billion-dollar right-wing foundation based in Milwaukee that have been pushing vouchers, what they are actually for is for getting rid of public education entirely. They've been very clear about that all along. So I take them at their word. This is a scheme to get rid of public schools and to undermine the opportunities of working people.
And yet you see in the communities of Milwaukee, in those poorer communities who are utilizing the voucher system, you see very strong support for the voucher system.
That's no longer true.
Give them those choices.
Yeah.
And if you look at, and it's interesting, the total funding, and you know, you talk about whether we can afford one public school system. I agree with that, but you say, can we afford it when we're seeing such abysmal results out of some of our public school systems? And you take MPS, Milwaukee Public Schools, in specifically, in the last decade, they've gone from well over 100,000 students to just over 70,000, yet their budget has ballooned during the same period without getting better results, with, in fact, declining results. So when you look at things like that and you say, that's a broken system, and I do think we need to make strong efforts to improve that system and systems like it and have a strong public school system. At the same time, offer alternatives for families and children to find other avenues to get an education, to get ahead in life.
Well, we'll be talking more about the possible expansion of school choice, the school voucher program, Monday at 6, from 6 until 6:50. We have an education professor to talk with us about that coming up on Monday at 6. Well, another education-related item from this week is that the UW Flex degree is flexing its muscles. It's being unveiled. A UW Milwaukee announced this week that it will begin to implement a flexible degree program for non-traditional adult students. The system would allow students to earn college credit by demonstrating knowledge that they learned outside of school. This is something that the governor and the UW have been working together on. Is this a good idea, Owen?
I think it's a fantastic idea. And I think that you've seen many industries, several strong industries, particularly in like the technology industries, and that's an industry I'm quite familiar with, where they've moved away from traditional education and traditional college education long ago because it really wasn't serving the needs of what people needed. And now they do, you know, mostly certifications and job experience, and those are important things. And there's no reason if you have a qualified technologist, somebody who spent years in the industry and wants to get a degree to further their career, that they can't use that job experience and that sort of information to bring that to bear to show that they're already competent in these areas. There's no need for them to sit through 3 months of a class to, you know, learn the theoretical about what they've been doing for a decade. So I think this is a great move forward for the UW system. I'm very happy to see them move in this direction. I think it's going to be great for Wisconsin.
Do you think it's going to be great, Ben?
I don't know. At first blush, it seems like a reasonable approach, but I haven't looked into this, and I'm sure that there are a variety of opinions. So I apologize, but I can't comment beyond that.
That's fine. We will talk a little bit more about jobs in that the governor did say that he wants the legislation that would make it easier to open an iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin to be priority number one for the legislature. He wants that to happen right away. Do you want it to happen right away, Ben?
Well, if you want to permanently damage your economy and your democracy, then open a mining district in your state. All you have to do is look at the impact of communities and states and nations that have become dependent on the mining industry to see the long-term economic development impacts. It's a great way to remove wealth from your community and allow somebody else to profit off of it. And it's a great way to ensure that the resources that we have in terms of natural resources are damaged for the long haul. And, of course, in the North Woods of Wisconsin, tourism remains a very important part of our economic strategy. If you look at the specifics of the legislation that the governor's put forward, there is a reason why 51% of the public opposes it. Only 37% at first blush said they support it, and that's actually a WPRI poll. It's a conservative polling outfit. And you look at what the bill does, and it's pretty clear why people would oppose the legislation. It gets rid of public hearings. It gets rid of contested case hearings to give experts the opportunity to challenge what the mining company has to say. It gives mining corporations early immunity from environmental and other damages. And in essence, and I could go on and on, in essence what it does is it takes aside of out-of-state mining corporations against the people and local communities of the state of Wisconsin. And we've had this fight my entire life with out-of-state mining corporations trying to pillage the North Woods for their own profit. And local people have repeatedly stood up and said no. The Republicans in the legislature went through this in the 90s. They found out that it was a loser for them politically in the end. And I think they'll find out it's a loser for them this time around.
Owen.
Well, the fact is that Wisconsin's been built on industries like that. We're called the Badger State because of our legacy in mining. It's on our flag. It's something that has built generations of wealth for Wisconsinites. And even today, you look at things that are happening in Wisconsin, you see our exports are up, and you look at what we're exporting heavy machinery, mining equipment, gear parts, I mean, earth-moving equipment, we're, you know, trucks. We build things in Wisconsin. We mine things in Wisconsin. We make things, and we export them to the world. And that's how this state's been built. And I think this notion that somehow we can turn our economy on this pivot and we can all become professors and biochemists and somehow build an economy on that is a fiction that only exists in certain sectors of the state. And when you go out into the state and talk to people where they used to have these heavy manufacturing jobs, where they used to have the mining jobs, and they're gone now, and their grandfathers worked there, and their great-grandfathers worked there, and they built homes, they built lives for themselves. It's real easy for us to sit in our offices and say, oh, this is good or bad, but this affects real people, and these are things that, while we can still do it and be environmentally sound, there are still ways to do it that will still build in the public input, and there are some areas with this bill where I agree with Ben. It needs some work. But I think there are ways to do it where we can do it responsibly and still enjoy the blessings of the resources that God put in this state for us to use.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is that the small business owners in northern Wisconsin and the farmers and the Bad River Chippewa and other people of northern Wisconsin are the real people. The people who aren't the real people, as far as I'm concerned, if we're going to talk about real America, to paraphrase Palin, are the owners of these mining corporations. Now, if you want to talk about manufacturing policy, I'm happy to talk with you until the cows come home about why we haven't retrofitted the Janesville plant, why we're not bringing wind power. We're actually shutting down renewable energy in the state as opposed to investing in it. That's something that's medium-scale manufacturing that can take hold in smaller communities across the state. If you want to talk about manufacturing policy, let's do that. But if you want to talk about mining, the reality is mining is a 19th century industry as far as Wisconsin's concerned. The fact that we were dependent on mining and the timber industry in the late 19th century gave rise to an era in which you had robber barons running the state, and there was a huge backlash against that called the Progressive Movement. Now, if you want to return to that, in which you have the impoverishment of rural communities and also urban communities, which I think actually that is what is happening right now in Wisconsin, there will be another backlash. And I think that we can usher in a new progressive era in this state. But let's be very clear. The mining industry is part of Wisconsin's past. If you want to look at lead mining in southwest Wisconsin, you can see the impacts of that today. It didn't go so well.
And there's this fiction that somehow that modern mining is like late 19th century mining with the gulags and the impoverished communities and all that. You look at modern mining communities, you look at even the oil drilling that's happening in North Dakota that's booming, the frack sand mining that's happening in communities in Wisconsin today that's making millionaires out of people. You look at modern iron mining. You look at modern mining, and it is not this picture of a 19th century economy.
There
are nations, there are states that are expanding based on this, and the truth is that as long as the world economy demands these raw materials, that mining is going to happen somewhere. Would we rather do it where we can benefit from it and where we can do it with strong environmental controls, or let that mining take place in other countries where they don't have those and where they ruin the economy worse and affect that world environment that eventually hits us all?
Let me have a couple of listeners weigh in here. Gary on Facebook writes, "It looks like the ban on mining in Wisconsin will finally come to an end, with no thanks to the Democrats who continue to oppose anything that will help their constituents, who will oppose anything that will help their constituents if Scott Walker is a part of it. The Republican majority will have to step up and do what is needed for Wisconsin to move forward." And then we have Alice in Sheboygan, who I think has a different viewpoint. Hi, Alice.
Hi. I'm so glad you let me on. Yes, I would ask one of the guests to go over to Tunnel City, Wisconsin, and see how happy the people are over there near Sparta. The houses that are for sale near this sand fracking mine that can't be sold because of the silica in the air. And as far as jobs are concerned, the jobs are hauling sand for the people around there, but mainly for people come in from who are being brought in from out of state.
Yeah, that's a different mine, but that's a sand frack. That's mine.
Well, I think she's probably
mining,
responding
yeah.
to Owen's point. And the reality is, I have been to many modern mining sites around the country, and I have seen the impact on Western states, and it's not positive. And the reality is that we do need to move to a new economy. The technologies change, and the basis of our economy can and must change, and we need to become less dependent on extraction industries overall if we're going to have an economy worth having 50 years from now.
Yeah. But you know, Dale Schultz, Republican State Senator Dale Schultz, wants to be able to have that mine, but he was afraid that the bill as it stood, Owen, was going to be harmful to the environment, that could be harmful to the environment by streamlining the permitting process as much as the bill did. So I think he wants the mine, but he just wants to strengthen the bill a little bit. What's so wrong with that?
Well, Dale Schultz is slippery in his own right, but in concept, if you take him at his word, you know, he's right. And I think that there are some ways we can improve the bill. I think there are some compromises that can be made for but I'm particularly concerned about the public input phases. If it can be done in an expedient fashion that doesn't make it a 10-year process to get a mining permit, I think that there are reasonable ways to make sure we have valid public input. There are reasonable environmental mitigation techniques we can use, and those are things that can be looked at. But right now, what we're getting from the Democrats is just no, 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 and there's absolutely no discussion about where the bill can be right. They just don't want it at all, and I think that's a shame for the future of Wisconsin.
Well, I need to. We're way past break time, and many other issues to cover in the week in review, so we will move on. Wisconsin Mining Association Chair Tim Sullivan told the Senate Select Committee on Mining yesterday, it held a hearing, that the state's mining laws are outdated and need modifications. We will find out just what sorts of changes he wants to see and the very latest on mining on our state capitol report on Monday from 7:30 until 8. Mining Association Chairman Tim Sullivan will be our guest on the State Capitol Report. Well, our guests during this edition of the Week in Review, Ben Mansky and Owen Robinson. We'll move on to some other state and national issues in just a moment. 1-800-642-1234. If you would like to bring up a topic for our Week in Review, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Coming up on the Ideas Network, at 4 o'clock this afternoon. It's Your Views on the News. You can join Ben Mirrens and his guest and call in and talk about what you think was the week's most important news story. Your Views on the News every Friday after 4. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our regular Friday Week in Review when we talk with two guests from different political viewpoints about the top state, national, and international news stories of the week. Today we have Ben Mansky, the executive director of Liberty Tree, and Owen Robinson, who is a columnist at the West Bend Daily News and a blogger at bootsandsabers.com. Still a few more state issues I want to talk to before we start talking national issues and fiscal cliff issues and other things. Conservative Republican State Representative Don Pridemore, who made some headlines because he supports arresting federal officials for attempting to implement the health care overhaul law, and he pushed for immigration reform similar to Arizona's, did register this week to run for the state superintendent of public instruction. Apparently, Pridemore wants to challenge the incumbent superintendent, Tony Evers, the only two announced candidates for this nonpartisan position on April the 2nd, that election. Let's see. I think it's Ben's turn to start. Hey, Ben Mansky, what do you think of that?
I think more candidates should get in the race. I think it would be more interesting to have candidates who represent a reform agenda that represents the interests of students and teachers. I think Evers is a technocrat. He's not like Pridemore in that sense. He doesn't come out of partisan politics. Pridemore is a longtime legislator who, of course, does have a very clear ideological agenda. I think that there is a place for having debates about the future of public education policy. And without a genuine progressive in this race, we won't have that, because all you'll have is Pridemore pushing his very southern approach to Wisconsin schools, and Evers playing the technocrat that he is. So the more the merrier.
So what do you think, Owen? Is Pridemore a better choice than Tony Evers?
I don't disagree with anything Ben just said. I think we'd love to see a lot of candidates for this race. It's an office that carries a fair amount of weight. It's not one that I personally think is one that should be a constitutional office, but it is what it is, and I would love to see a lot of different viewpoints so we can have a serious education debate in our state.
In another spring election issue, State Supreme Court Justice Patience Rogensack this week formally announced her reelection bid. She will face Lemon Law attorney Vince Megna in the April 2nd primary. Dane County Circuit Judge Marianne Sumi and Marquette University Law School professor and, by the way, a Week in Review regular, Ed Falone, have also said they are considering running for state Supreme Court in the spring. Owen, what's at stake in this race?
It's a huge race is what it is, because what you see is in the past, really since Walker's been elected, you've seen effort after effort of the liberals in the state to really try to turn back the clock from the reforms that Walker's been making with the recall election, with the recalls for the legislative offices in the last Supreme Court election, in the November election, and they've lost on every front except for the temporary basis where they took a slim majority back in the Senate, which was quashed away here in November. So this is for them all the marbles. If they feel they can't turn that court to be a more liberal court that will overrule, or who they believe will overrule, some of the reforms like Act 10 and whatnot that are on their way to the court, then those will become institutional policies for a generation in Wisconsin. So I expect this is going to be a dragged down, dirty, nasty fight that everybody's going to complain about, but everybody's going to participate in. And if you look at some of the people getting in the race, Vince Megna, he's a liberal bomb thrower. That's really all he's been, and an attorney. So he's going to be interesting. Sumi will be a lightning rod for the left to rally around with her opposition to Act 10 previously. Ed Falone's a nice guy. I think he kind of gets sidled out by such strong other players.
Your thoughts on the possible field and the state Supreme Court race in the spring, Ben?
Well, I'd certainly like to see that larger field emerge. I think Owen's absolutely right that this is an essential election. Too many people go to the polls without paying attention to the Supreme Court races. I know people who are listening right now who may end up going to the polls and simply looking at the names on Election Day. I know Louis Butler lost his Supreme Court race because many people I know went to the polls and said, I'm voting for a woman. And didn't know her politics, and also didn't know who Louis Butler was. So I think that it's very important that we do the work of educating everybody in the state about what's at stake. I think that there is this road of victory that Owen is painting for the organized right, which is very conveniently ignores the fact that with redistricting this past election cycle, the Republicans did not win. Such a landslide majority in the state legislature. And I think it would be very interesting for somebody to do the analysis and actually see how many votes the Republican and Democratic candidates got, as well as the other candidates in those races total. I think that the Republican majority in the state legislature is vastly overstated, and it does not reflect the sentiment of the people of Wisconsin.
Well, moving on to another court-related issue and political-related issue, one of Scott Walker's former Milwaukee County aides could be going to prison. Tim Russell was in court this week, and he pleaded guilty to two felonies and one misdemeanor in connection with alleged thefts. He was arrested in part of this John Doe investigation that's been going on. This week, Governor Walker also told the Associated Press he is convinced he is not a target of this John Doe investigation. Ben Mansky, what do you think?
Well, what is clear is that this is a public official who has run an office awash in criminality. There is the remaining question about whether the FBI will get Walker, so to speak. And if they have the evidence, then I certainly expect that they will not be political, but that they will actually pursue him. And if they don't, then I will assume that the FBI is doing the right thing in this case. But that's really only a part of the question. I think the real question is, what do Wisconsinites think about this governor who has had top aides not only indicted, but essentially admit to criminal activity, to using public office to promote a partisan agenda or a political agenda. And if this were the Wisconsin of the 1980s or 1970s, Walker would have resigned already to have been presiding over a office where so many of his aides have admitted to criminal activity.
Yeah, and let me clarify that Tim Russell did pleaded guilty to one felony. It mm-hmm. was related to taking money from a group that raises money for veterans. The other charges will be dismissed. Owen, your thoughts on the John Doe?
Well, first off, I want to say that what Russell did was unforgivable, and I hope that when it comes to sentencing, they throw the book at him. It's stealing from veterans is not acceptable in this state or any other, and I hope he gets what he deserves. Bearing in mind that it was originally Walker who actually started the investigation and turned over the information he was finding out about that to be investigated. What we see from the John Doe going on is that we have, this has been an ongoing investigation for over 2 years now, and the notion that it's a secret John Doe has become laughable, as you see even the judge presiding over it starting to make public comments about it. And that's the whole purpose of a John Doe investigation, is to keep that secrecy around it in order to protect people who may or may not be guilty. And what we've seen is the erosion of the whole notion of a John Doe, which has really been unfair to the people involved who haven't done anything wrong, like Governor Walker. And at this point, it's been 2 years. If they have the evidence, bring it and charge him. If he's guilty of something, then I'm in full support of bringing charges, and let's see where it is, and if there's corruption going on, let's root it out, let's get rid of it. But if there are no charges, if there are no evidence of wrongdoing, then it's time to end this investigation, as would be fair to any of us. I think if, whether it's Ben or me or you, Joy, to have somebody sitting there investigating your life and everything about you for 2 years and have no evidence of wrongdoing and yet keep that investigation going is downright un-American and unprofessional.
Let me bring in a caller, Sean in Madison. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for the great program. You certainly broached the subject that I wanted to ask about with respect to John Doe, but I wondered if I could add one quick...
Don't change the subject.
Okay, great. So the basic question I have is, Ben mentioned that the FBI is clearly gathering evidence, and if they have it, they'll move forward, and if they don't, they won't. It's been frustrating for many of us to see, you know, announcements, just like Owen says. It's supposed to stay under the radar until such a time that it's announced, but I wondered if they could both comment on the likelihood that they, you know, just their gut feeling that it's going to be presented and that the governor will be involved in it somehow.
Thank you, Sean, so much. And I apologize for being abrupt, but we're so short on time. Ben Mansky, how do you think this is going to turn out?
You know, I have no idea. And honestly, I think that there are political... I mean, when I was saying that I hope that the FBI will not take political considerations into account, I think they oftentimes do. I don't think they should. And I think that there is the appearance of going after a sitting governor is a big deal. And I don't think that they should let that hold them back if they have compelling evidence. But I think it may hold them back. I don't know what they're doing. I don't talk to them. But what I do know is that this idea that Owen has put out there that we should hold Scott Walker harmless, that we should just assume that he has nothing to do with the doings of his top aides, I think is simply out of keeping with the idea of executive accountability. This was going on under his nose. We know that. And regardless of what personal knowledge or involvement he had, and there's certainly the appearance that he did have personal involvement for what is public at this point, that he should be held accountable for what his aides did.
Owen?
I think certainly executives should be held accountable, and I think clearly here you have, if there's evidence of anything, it's Walker unduly placing trust in people he shouldn't have. And while that is an executive breach, if you will, and something he should be held accountable for, he is an elected official. He's held accountable at the polls. But the notion that he's done some criminal wrongdoing is where that line is drawn. And we do have the standard of he is innocent until proven guilty. And the fact that nobody's even brought any charges at this point tells me that they don't have anything. And if they did, then why aren't they bringing it out and why aren't they bringing forth charges? And that's where they need to either, you know, get going or get done. Because at this point, Wisconsin needs to move on.
All right. Coming up on the Week in Review, Palestine getting recognized as a state by the UN, Republicans, Susan Rice and Benghazi, and fiscal cliff talks. And the Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Owen Robinson and Ben Mansky. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. Coming up on the Ideas Network, Veronica Rickert is with you talking with her guest about scientists making remarkable discoveries about the brain. That's coming up after 9. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review. In our Week in Review quiz for today, we have a lottery question. Wisconsin missed out on the $579 million grand prize in the Powerball lottery, but a $1 million ticket was sold in Wisconsin. Our question, what Wisconsin city was that ticket bought in? The $1 million winner in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll announce the answer and the winner of the quiz at the end of the show. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Ben Mansky and Owen Robinson. And let's take Kelly in River Falls next. Hi, Kelly.
Well, good morning. I wanted to talk about the vote on Palestine, but I wanted to say Owen and Ben really did a great job on that mining discussion this morning. That's one of the best counterpoints I've heard on that subject since it's come up.
Thanks, Kelly.
You bet. But on this Palestine vote, you know, it's been touted as a big deal case by the U.S. and Israel because it's going to disrupt the peace process, but yet in the same breath they say it's meaningless. And I think it's significant, but I wanted to know...
Oh, we're losing you, Kelly, with a call waiting or something. Is this significant, Ben Mansky?
I think it is significant. I think it's very important. I also think it's telling that there are only 9 member states of the United Nations that voted no. I was looking at the map the other day, and aside from Canada, the United States, and Israel, the one that jumped out at me was Austria. And I have to say this, if you're Israeli or you're Jewish, when I'm both, in Austria is standing with you, there's something wrong with this picture. I found that very telling. The reality is that since the assassination of Prime Minister Rabin, Israeli policy has been to make the Palestinian state unviable. And it's not only an immoral policy, it's really counterproductive. And it's counterproductive for both peoples. And from the standpoint of Israel, I think many Israelis see the need for a rapid recognition of the state of Palestine. This has become the position of mainstream parties now on the left in Israeli politics. And I hope the sooner that happens, the better. I think that we need to see increased pressure from the Obama administration on the Israeli government. I don't expect to see that, but to end the apartheid policies in Israel, to take down the apartheid wall, and to end collective punishment of Palestinian civilians. I think the UN vote will increase that pressure, but the United States is far behind the curve on this.
Owen.
I do think it's significant. It is a step in an interesting direction. Here I find myself in complete support of President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice, of all people, and where their stances on this, where what really needs for progress to happen there is not for some UN resolution or some UN-enforced peace, because those clearly don't work. We've seen that all over the world for a generation now. But what we need is for the parties who are involved there, the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority, and who's really left out of the mix here is Hamas, who's really running that, the Gaza Strip and those areas now. The Palestinian Authority is losing support, particularly in this recent conflict with Israel. And as we see that, so until Hamas is at the table and Hamas is dealt with, I don't know that any peace can happen dealing with just the Palestinian Authority. So until that house is in order, I don't see how there can be peace there, and certainly I don't see how the UN can affect that.
Moving on, UN Ambassador Susan Rice is having some trouble winning over Senate Republicans that she met with this week, which could hurt her chances at potentially becoming Secretary of State. She is being named as a rumored contender for the job once Hillary Clinton leaves the job. Rice met with Senator Susan Collins of Maine, who said she was troubled. Following their discussion, Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Kelly Ayotte said the same thing a day earlier. Meanwhile, President Obama says that he couldn't be prouder of the job that Rice has done. So does Susan Rice win the Ben Mansky seal of approval?
Well, she appears to be the best qualified to carry forward current State Department policy, so she should absolutely not be confirmed. And I would hope that there would be members of the United States Senate who would stand up to the president and to stand up to the State Department. I think what Owen said just now is exactly right, that Rice represents a continuation of the Clinton policy on Palestine, but also on many other issues. You look at the role of the State Department in terms of tackling the climate crisis, and the United States under the current administration has been an obstacle to progress on dealing with what is, in fact, the most significant issue facing our country right now, which is climate. That's another subject which I hope we can come back to another day, but the State Department has been an obstacle there. It's been an obstacle in terms of pushing for human rights. This State Department has supported dictatorships and coups, for example, the coup in Honduras, and attempts to overthrow the democratically elected governments, not only of Venezuela, but also more recently Bolivia and also Argentina. And so Rice should not be confirmed, and Tammy Baldwin and of course, current members of the Senate should stand up and take on the White House on this.
Well, your thoughts on Susan Rice and especially the Benghazi situation, Owen Robinson. That's why the Republicans are quizzing her.
Absolutely. The Benghazi situation, what that's all about is the fact that when it's clear now from testimony in front of Congress and from leaked documents and Obama disclosures that they knew within hours that was an open terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate that killed four Americans, that it went on for hours and hours and hours, and that there were no spontaneous uprising that this emerged out of. There was no response to an internet video. This was just a pure Al-Qaeda terrorist attack or an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group terrorist attack upon Americans. And they knew that within hours, and yet 5 days after the attack, Rice was trotted out onto five different talk shows to claim it was a response to a video, to claim that there were riots in the streets and this was just spontaneous out of there, when the administration knew or should have known, and she knew or should have known, that that was a false narrative. And when I say false narrative, I mean lie. And you cannot have a Secretary of State that comes out and lies to the American people for any reason. So I think that that is a valid concern. And from a political standpoint, when Rice doesn't have the support of Collins or McCain or Graham, I mean, this is the relative left wing of the Republican Party in the U.S. Senate. If she's not going to get support from them, she's certainly not going to get support from the right wing senators. And if she's not going to get support from the far left senators in the Democratic Party, I see no way she can be confirmed. And I think Obama's politically facing a pretty serious downturn if he decides to put her up for nomination. He would be much better, much to my chagrin, putting up somebody like Senator John Kerry or somebody like that who will breeze through to confirmation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what Owen just said reveals what's really going on here. It's just an attempt by the Republican Party to blunt the momentum of the Obama administration coming out of these elections. I think this whole issue is a made-up issue. They're not really scared of Rice. They just want to score a political victory. Unfortunately, I don't think there will be left-wing senators standing up to the Obama White House. There should be. I'm certainly calling on them to do that. So this is a manufactured debate.
We have just a couple minutes more to go, and we didn't even get to fiscal cliff yet. The last headline I saw from yesterday was that the fiscal cliff talks have stalled. Is there going to be an agreement, Owen?
At this point, I don't see how. The proposal that Secretary of Treasury Timothy Geithner brought out on behalf of Obama yesterday was completely laughable. It proposed $1.6 billion in tax increases, $50 billion in new spending, completely locking Congress out of any discussion in the future upon the debt ceiling or having any control of that, moving that authority completely, this budgetary authority completely over to the executive branch, and in return offered absolutely nothing. Offered to say, well, we may talk about entitlement reform sometime next year with no details whatsoever. It's a laughable proposal, and it was properly laughed at. And until the Obama administration gets serious about it, and frankly, I don't think they are. I think at this point, Obama's either indifferent about the fiscal cliff or he wants us to go over it, because that's the only message I'm getting from their behavior.
Ben.
Well, I would be laughing except for all the things that are not part of this discussion right now. The costs of war, the reality that we do not have a progressive income tax in this country. So the very minor return to 10 years ago that the Obama proposal represents is not nearly enough. It doesn't bring us back to the golden age of Eisenhower, much less Reagan, in terms of tax policy. The fact that the major driver of this imagined fiscal cliff is, and sorry for the mixed metaphors there, but it's private insurance. The fact that we allow these private insurance corporations to impoverish Americans, the fact that the Robin Hood tax, the financial transaction tax, is off the table. I mean, the reality is that Obama came into this election cycle having put Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block, in his own words. And this is not a real debate. It's a debate between the center and the far right. And the majority of the American people's interests are not in play here.
Let me hold it there. We're almost completely out of time. We have to congratulate Bill in Milwaukee for being the winner of today's Week in Review quiz. He knew that it was the city of West Allis where a $1 million Powerball ticket was bought. Two winning tickets for the big 500-plus million jackpot were sold in Arizona and Missouri. So $1 million to somebody in the West Allis area. And also I heard that the old Miracle Mile in Fond du Lac, the Ma and Pa's gas station that was sold to a new owner, was also sold a $10,000 ticket in this week's lottery. So, Ben, did you buy a lottery ticket this
week? No, I have to apologize to my brother-in-law and Corey in Utah for not doing that. But Corey, I live in Madison, so I guess we wouldn't have won anyway.
Owen, did you? Were you hopeful?
I did. I was hopeful. I did not win, and I sure hope that guy in West Dallas cashes it in before these new tax rates go into effect.
All right. Thank you both very much for being with us. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Owen Robinson and Ben Mansky. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Amanda Magnus, Cynthia Schuster, and Bill Martins. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.